Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy any investment based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
So, welcome to the Midweek Takeaway. Today we have our guest, Ben Kloop from Energy Pathways, and we have a resident expert, Charles Archer, who's going to interview Ben now about the article he has just recently released on Energy Pathways. So over to you, Charles.
Oh, hi, Ben. How are you?
Yeah, great. Yeah, excellent. Yeah. Good to be here.
Feeling a lot better than maybe a month or two ago, I would imagine.
Yeah, no, things are going well. Yeah.
Good. So, Ben, you know, that I always try to, you know, start off these interviews because not everyone's heard of Energy Pathways, and particularly since the Section 35 was announced. It's now becoming something of, well, not becoming, it has now been announced something of national significance. So could you just very briefly, this is an integrated energy transition company developing the Energy Storage Hub, otherwise known as MESH, very briefly explain what MESH is, why it's important to the UK, and why the Energy Secretary has designated it as of critical importance to the country?
Yeah, sure. So the MESH project is an integrated energy solution for the UK, as you've already pointed out. The main components of it are long-duration energy storage, which is a storage system based substantially on compressed air as a means of storing the UK's renewable energy. And it also is a decarbonized energy system in that we will be producing hydrogen at scale to help decarbonize power systems within the UK, as well as essentially kickstart hydrogen economy in new industries, which in our case is low carbon ammonia production and graphite production. So this is a total solution type project. And why is it important for the UK? And why is it a project of national significance? Well, the big challenge for the UK energy system is as it increases its wind power generating capacities or renewable footprint, there is increasingly excess and wasted wind power, which is costing the UK taxpayer and consumer an awful lot of money. It's already
in the billions, isn't it?
It's a billion now, and according to NESO, that number could be, or is expected to be, between 6 to 8 billion by 2030. How does that problem really get solved? Well, the key thing here is storage, and it needs to be in the form of long duration energy storage. Batteries really don't move the needle here because they don't store that much. You need long duration energy storage solutions, and that's what we're constructing. So we can store wind energy for a period of up to 7 days in our initial project and dispatch it out of storage for a period of 7 days. And that energy, which or that power that's dispatched out of storage, is effectively a decarbonized power supply. So currently, flexible or dispatchable power that the UK relies on is coming out of an entirely separate system, which is unabated gas power. And yeah, running in an entirely separate system, it costs money and it emits a lot of CO2.
Yeah, well, I think it's this, we talk about the energy transition, Miliband and net zero, and there's elements of it that I disagree with. But I think whether you agree or disagree with the government's policy, if you're going to go through the energy transition, then there is a right way to do it and there's a wrong way to do it. And if you're going to rely more and more on renewable sources, then you need to have energy storage. And we already have, do we not already have the lowest energy storage in Europe? Or, you know, we must be near, at the lowest or very near the lowest, aren't we?
Yeah, currently, I mean, in terms of energy storage, the UK, from a gas storage point of view, has essentially one of the lowest in
like a few days, isn't it? It's nothing.
It will be about 6 days when the Rough gas storage facility closes, if indeed that's what Centrica's caution may happen. From a electricity storage point of view, the UK relies principally on lithium-ion batteries. And the UK's, the average storage duration of the UK's fleet of lithium-ion batteries is 1.4 hours. So it really doesn't really do an awful lot. And if you just sort of bank up lithium-ion batteries one after the other, that is a very expensive way of storing renewable energy. And so all of that really just gets passed on to the consumers. So what we're in the business doing here is doing storage, but in a cost-effective or an affordable way that passes through and reduces the impact of all this wasted wind on consumer bills.
When that Section 35 designation came in, obviously the feeling was great. The share price, surged upwards. But in terms of practical changes, how much does it change for the regulatory process? Obviously, investor perception is much stronger. And how rare is it for a development stage company like yours to receive that nationally significant infrastructure status?
Well, I think what it does, and the purpose of the Planning Act 2008 legislation, which is what in effect the project now is umbrellaed under, is it's designed to enable the Secretary of State to fast track the approvals process for projects which have been designated of national significance. So that's the benefit to us, and it enables the Secretary of State to have the decision and push through these projects through the UK's bureaucratic system. Now, I think for a company like us, this is to be recognised of having a project of such importance to the country is a strong endorsement that the government sees our project as a critical part of the future energy landscape for the UK. But I believe our fundamentals sort of demonstrate that. And we talked around the critical need of the government or the UK energy system needing long duration energy storage. And the reality is the array of options available are actually quite limited. There's pumped hydro systems that are being looked at, and those are, in our opinion, going to be significantly more capital intensive than what the Mesh project is going to be.
Exciting. Interesting. And then, when you're comparing strategic importance, obviously it's strategically important to the UK, but you compare it to mega projects like Hinkley Point C or the major offshore wind developments. Is it up there in terms of importance, or is it a little bit lower? What are your thoughts?
I think there's been enough commentary out of the government that the kind of the key areas of the energy transition for the UK are expanding wind power capacity and storage. I mean, I think it seems pretty clear to me that those are the priorities and need to be urgently addressed in order to get to the immediate objective of CP 2030 or Clean Power 2030. So yeah, look, we think we're doing this is a project that is entirely consistent and aligned with government energy policy and priorities.
And then of these five distinct systems within Mesh, obviously the storage, the flexible power, the hydrogen, the graphite, the gas storage. Which component do you think will reach technical and commercial maturity first? Do you have that roadmap ahead of you yet, or you're not there?
No, we don't have that roadmap sort of all laid out, but I could see all of them actually maturing in parallel and has potential of contributing by the Clean Power 2030 target. So, but probably worth noting is that we're not doing anything from a technology point of view, which is new. This is proven technology from a compressed air system perspective, so compression units, turbine units. It's all existing technology. We're just sort of putting it all together and putting it all together in the right place.
Well, putting it all together in the right place is the challenge because, well, I don't know actually. I'm guessing this is my question for you. When you're integrating all of these technologies together under one banner and also under, this regulatory and operational framework, which is in the UK can be challenging. Do you think is it difficult to integrate them all together, or is having them together a benefit, or both?
Well, I think there's two arms to that question. Firstly, technically, putting them all together, technically, no, it's not a challenge. In fact, the UK is blessed with a highly talented workforce supply chain to deliver such offshore projects, and that's called the existing oil and gas industry of the UK. The experience capability is absolutely there. What is different, I guess, is the second point you raise, which is the regulatory landscape. which this, let's say, crosses over a number of the regulatory structures of the UK. That indeed does need to be managed and worked through, but benefit of the Section 35 and the designation of being a project of national significance is it essentially umbrellas the regulatory approval processes under one planning act.
It makes life a lot easier. I mean, it feels to me, I've written several letters to various bodies that the regulators are so fragmented in a world where solutions like this might become more and more common. And in particular, I guess once Mesh is up and running, I imagine it's scalable. You can replicate at other UK or European or even US sites in the far-flung future. I mean, is there something specific about where you're building it now that means it can't be replicated elsewhere, or do you think this is a model which can be done again and again?
Yeah, we absolutely think this is scalable, not just for the benefit of the UK, but also in other countries. What limits or the sort of the implementation of our business model in other locations? A key attribute is utilizing salt caverns for the storage of energy, and the benefit of using salt caverns is essentially it reduces the capital intensity of a storage developing a storage asset. And but for the UK, it's blessed with having significant geological salt features that can be used for salt cavern construction. So where we are is not the only location for doing this, and other countries have, in our opinion, suitably located salt sequences for implementing our business model.
Potentially, you're not officially looking at them at the moment, but I see from a twinkle in your eye that potentially, after hours at work, you are looking at where those sites might be in the future. I mean, is this why Energy Pathways attracted these tier one partners? Siemens Energy, Wood, Costain, KBR, Hazer. These are all, many of these are tier one companies getting involved with, what is effectively a very small microcap. They're looking at that scalability for the future, aren't they? That's why they want to be involved. Would you say that's a fair
Yeah,
comment?
and I'd sort of express the view that the government sees it as scalable too. So, it whilst Mesh is a significant and large project in its own right, we see a lot of opportunity for scaling it up within the UK, and the UK government has clear targets with respect to storage and long duration energy storage, which are in the gigawatt type levels, and there's a big gap to be filled.
Yeah. Well, I think you having these partners obviously improves your credibility, but not just with retail institutional investors, but also infrastructure financiers, export credit agencies, and so on and so forth. You've mentioned the government a few times. We talked about cornerstone financing the last time we were chatting. I think most investors expected there would be a small raise, which has just been concluded. And, I know many of the people who've gone in on that raise. The vast majority of them are already long-term holders of the shares, right? And they're here for the longer term. But I'm guessing the question is that raise probably gives you maybe 9 months of runway. What kind of milestones are you hoping to achieve in the next sort of 6 to 9 months? And are we hoping to see that infrastructure cornerstone financing coming in the near future?
Yeah, so look, the financing, we're really pleased about the financing we've just completed. We wanted to keep it tight, so it's gone to our existing shareholder base, and we're very pleased to have the support of our existing shareholders. And with a tight register, we're very pleased with that, taking it into the next phase of the project. But really, now we're with the government's endorsement of the project, we're now in a position to move forward with our existing industrial partners and take this project to a stage where it will draw cornerstone investors into the project as we take it through the next phases. So it's a really exciting time, but we're looking to build and grow strategic partnerships as we move forward.
When we talk strategic partnerships, maybe UK Infrastructure Bank or Great British Energy, you'd imagine, and again, I feel like I'm putting words in your mouth and not trying to, but you'd imagine there's chances of collaboration or financing support from that angle as well, wouldn't you?
Indeed, I mean, you only have to read the mandate of the National Wealth Fund and GB Energy to let's say you see that the Mesh project is potentially of going to be of interest to them.
And that in terms of this renewable curtailment problem that the UK currently has, where's the value capture model underpinning mesh? I mean, we're talking about £1 billion of lost wind energy, for example. And then just sort of in just in terms of national security, just having energy storage in general is important, as we saw from the Russia-Ukraine war. But of
Yeah,
that.
so look, it's meshes, the benefits of mesh are driven, as I described, partly due to the ability to construct salt caverns, which can at scale, which can store power or energy for long periods of time and at scale. The other key, call it geographic attribute, is where it sits relative to the grid, and a grid which is dominated and increasingly dominated by wind energy. And in the UK grid system, you have substantially the wind power being generated in a variable manner into the north, so in Scotland, North England, and the demand centres sitting in the south. And therefore, a location is we think an optimal location for harnessing that excess wind, which is substantially generating in the north and needs to be transmitted to the south. And the major grid trunk lines run very close to our project. And so we can essentially reduce the amount of curtailed wind, i.e. wind which is told to shut in, so that value can be extracted by storing it in the salt caverns. And then, when the wind's not blowing, that stored energy has value. And if you look at sort of the electricity prices, you're starting to see increasingly volatility coming into the grid market when the wind doesn't blow, and there's growing increased demand for dispatchable solutions, which is indeed what we are. And so there's value can be extracted from that lost wasted wind through just storing it.
Well, it's kind of a bit mad to me because so every it feels like every 5 minutes, it's probably not though. We see more and more money going into wind farms, not just in the UK, but not just from private companies, but also from the government. The Great British Energy, for example, and this £1 billion investment along with the Crown Estate to build more wind farms that came out in June of this year. And yet the wind that we're currently producing is, we can't store the power already and we're having to turn them off. Does it make sense to you, or is there something I'm missing
Well, look,
there?
if you track different energy systems and the cost to the consumer of electricity, there's a strong correlation between those countries which have a high renewable footprint. Cost of energy is going up. The issue is to reduce the wastage of a renewable system. And look in and if you look at it in this sort of light, current average demand for electricity in the UK is somewhere in the region of about 35 gigawatts. The pre-existing, after tw 2 decades of wind development, the capacity of that wind generating capability is around about the same number, 35 gigawatts. What we're doing now in the UK is the plans are to effectively treble that wind generating capacity. So clearly there is going to be a supply demand imbalance. Putting aside, grid constraints, there's going to be a supply demand imbalance, and with that's why curtailment costs are going to increase unless a storage solution is found.
Or multiple storage solutions. And
Multiple storage
yes,
solutions.
it's possible you could deliver more of them, But I think even if they didn't build any more wind energy, this still needs to be built or something very similar to it. Would you say that's fair?
Indeed. So indeed. And the value of that, you call it wasted wind, which is increasing, as the capacity of the wind is generating capacity has increased. The cost of that wind generating capacity, as defined by the Contracts for Difference award process, which is a guaranteed, revenue stream, whether the wind is taken or not, that it's now gone above. The last round was in excess of £110 per megawatt hour. So the cost of that, renewable supply is also increasing. So it's important to not waste, the cost of that is expensive, and it's important not to, essentially let that be wasted.
Yeah, well, I mean, just the CapEx alone, not just the CapEx, but also kind of think of the words. When you talk about wind energy being green, right, as in good for the environment compared to gas, for example, you still have to use a lot of oil, a lot of gas, a lot of coal to build the windmills in the first place and to lubricate them and keep them operating. That it's only green if they can actually operate 24/7. If they have to be shut off all the time, then it doesn't seem green to me to build these things unless you can actually use the energy that's being generated. But beyond that decarbonisation, obviously that's incredibly important. How does mesh contribute to an industrial strategy? So we talked a little bit about hydrogen, ammonia, graphite. These are all also kind of essential and things that the government are very keen on getting delivered, aren't they?
So a key part of, and we've talked about priorities for the UK's energy transition being wind and storage. Not far behind that is hydrogen economy and establishing that. A challenge in establishing a hydrogen economy is developing hydrogen markets for future hydrogen production. And creating that connectivity. In our case, the way we look at this is we look at it in a total energy system way, and so we see the opportunity to produce hydrogen as a means of decarbonizing flexible power generating. Going back to the original point I made, which is the UK's flexible power generating capacity relies on unabated gas power, and so we're looking for a solution that decarbonizes that. And so our hydrogen production is hydrogen to power supply, and the means by which we manufacture or produce the hydrogen is through a technology which is called methane pyrolysis, which is essentially cracking of a methane molecule into carbon and hydrogen, and which we have exclusive rights to use within the UK. So with that, and the benefit of that is it's a low cost hydrogen production technology. So we estimate that the cost of hydrogen from the mesh project will be somewhere between a third or a quarter that of green hydrogen. Now, I've described one market for the hydrogen. The other one which we sort of backing here is which contributes to the future sort of industrial strategy of the UK is the production of low carbon ammonia. There's a number of reasons why we can do that, we think, in a cost-effective way, but it utilizes some of the natural attributes of UK domestic gas, which is rich in nitrogen, and that enables us to sort of manufacture low carbon ammonia in a competitive way. And currently the UK has essentially shut its last ammonia production capability, which was a high emission plant, but that was last year. So it's a strategic asset from a UK point of view to have its own production capability. And if we can do that in a low carbon way, which we can, that is also a strategic industrial asset for the UK.
Good, good.
Ben, what is the potential size of all of this? Charles has been asking you very specific questions about the whole thing, but if the mesh project happens, you have the graphite, you have the gas production, you have the storage, you have all the other things that you've talked about. How big a revenue producer is this company potentially? If it achieves the vision that you wanted to achieve, how big is that?
So yeah, as you've rightly described, there's a number of revenue streams that come from the mesh project: decarbonized flexible power gen, storage revenues, as well as hydrogen revenues, low carbon ammonia, and graphite. So there's a suite of revenue streams. Let's suffice to say that we're going to be able to generate revenues in the hundreds of millions per year.
You say hundreds of millions. Is it possible that that increases even within this project to sort of £1 billion worth of revenue, do you think, or is that over the top?
There's a number of upside opportunities with this core project. For example, the graphite component of what we're doing has a significant upside aspect to it. We conservatively estimate revenues from graphite to be $500 a ton. But there's the graphite market is growing rapidly, and there's a significant undersupply. So UK has no graphite production of note already, and so we will be a leader in that area, and there's potential for big revenue upsides.
Very good. And is this only Marren? So in other words, if you went to the next project, which, as you know, I'm rubbish at names, so it's whatever it's called. that's close by, would that double up everything? That's a bit simplistic.
Well, the mesh project really offers a full decarbonisation solution for UK domestic gas production. So by running through our hydrogen pyrolysis facility, we can fully decarbonise UK gas production.
Very good. Back to you, Charles.
I just had a couple more, Kev, but so there's two more questions. So Ben, how long do you reckon, and I know it's, you might say as long as a piece of string, but to get all licensing in place and development consent, how long do you reckon that might be from now, having acquired the Section 35?
Well, we're in the middle of that process at the moment, working with the government around the approval processes, and as you've already described, it's sort of multifaceted. So that's something we're working out at the moment. But our target here is to be operational for Clean Power 2030 and generating revenues by then.
Excellent, excellent. Okay, a very political answer. I won't push you. Last question from me. This is one that I think, anyone new to the story might want to, hear your answer from. Tripping over my words here. There's a lot of very large companies out there who could potentially, develop a project like this. Why is it that Energy Pathways is the one that's, struck out and decided we're going to build mesh and nobody else has decided to do similar? What is it that you have? I guess what's your economic moat? That means that nobody else is going to, steal your thunder. Nobody else has tried to do this, maybe is one way of putting it.
Well, I think it's the advantage of being a small company, and it's not necessarily just in this space, but being able to move nimbly and being able to integrate and develop solutions. We see ourselves as an innovator, and we've got a first mover advantage. But we see our business model as clearly something that is needed within the UK energy landscape, and I think we've been able to join the dots, and that's a reflection of, I think, the team, and the way we work, and problem solving approach to the way to do business.
Wonderful. And okay, I have one more question now because you mentioned you're ready, you're going, it's 2030, everything's gone according to plan. What's your plans beyond 2030 to 2040 to 2045? Or is it too early to think of those yet?
It'll be on a beach because it'll be sold for billions of pounds.
Is that the idea, Ben? He's smiling. No, I don't think so.
No, well, no, I think where we started from, if you this business model is scalable. Our initial project, we're developing a 350 megawatt flexible power plant, and we think we can scale this up into the gigawatt type territory at a number of locations, not just within the UK.
Excellent. Thanks, Ben. Cheers.
Thanks, Ben. I think you're in a great position now. I mean, a month ago, yes, we were all saying our prayers. I think that the S35 came in, and now the S35's come in. You've had a fantastic raise. Don't care what anybody says in the market. You've raised basically at the share price, and you've got the money now, I presume, to be in a very comfortable position to negotiate with the institutions to get an even greater sum of money to move the project forward. So good luck.
Thank you. Appreciate the time. Thank you.
This podcast was brought to you by Roast PR Limited. If you would like to appear on a future episode of The Sunday Roast, please email admin@thesundayroast.net.